Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
A grain of rice
is
going to tip the scale. Just remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen, and now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk I'll declare for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. The league is nearly done. Promotion and relegation loom large. You're very welcome to the Allianz Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse and I'm joined by the former Armagh footballer Oisín McConville and by the former Galway footballer and manager Kevin Walsh. Kevin, you're very welcome. What did you think of Galway at the weekend?
Thanks, Paul. I suppose if you turn back the clock to 2 weeks ago down in Tralee and I look at them yesterday, it was a far big improvement in what they were doing. So, but you know, I suppose at the home venue in Shum, great to get back there as well. Tightened up in the defence. But you know, played far more bodies behind the ball, which we're come accustomed to talking about a lot. Anyway, so it's a really important, I think, that the defensive structure is right, and obviously the attacking, you know, from there is really important. But yesterday, obviously, kept a lot of bodies. But then again, you know, if you look at Dublin, the first 15 minutes, they were completely behind the ball. They allowed Galway have the ball in the full back line, half back line, no pressure on whatsoever. So just feeling their way into the game. So I think all the best teams, regardless of what's been said or shouted about, all the best teams will understand how to defend and what areas to defend. You know, we can have the romantic side of it, what I call the social football, hoof and kick, and that's gone if you want to win. So I don't think I'd be putting the social football in the same line as winning.
And if you look at Dublin, do you think enough attention is paid to Dublin's defensive efforts and how Dublin set up defensively?
I think, Paul, look, I think nearly everybody knows that. It's just... I think because of their, you know, they have an expansive game, they're great athletes, their transition is good. But, you know, I think a lot of people choose to ignore exactly how good they are in defence. And by that, I mean, good is getting bodies in the right places, which is automatically behind the ball anyway. So I think this, you know, if you go deep into it and analyse it properly, you'll find that they do put bodies behind the ball. I mean, look, I was there for a number of years. We analysed every team we played against. You know, even broke down one of our own games to see was it really true, all the stuff that was being said in the media. And you know, Dublin, they continuously put players behind the ball in the right places. They take the time, they swallow up all the space that the opponents would like to have, and they do it well. And that's one of the reasons that they're winning so much.
Do you think Galway have the footballers to beat Dublin at the moment?
Look, I suppose yesterday it was a Tuam venue. I thought Dublin looked very uncomfortable there. They wouldn't be used to those type of venues, you know, where there's no stands around the place and stuff like that. So I thought it would be a great chance to get in there yesterday. There's probably a lot of younger fellas on the team at the minute who will need to blend in, who will need to understand if you're doing a defensive system. It's not about just getting bodies on the ball. It's understanding what to do. It's about the footwork there. It's about what space you take up. It's about where the sweeper stands. It's about... you know, not just getting bodies back, and you will keep the score down by getting bodies back, but if you're going to win, you need to understand your help defence. You know, if you look back at the goal that the young sub for Dublin got yesterday, you know, the number three for Galway was, he didn't do the 2v1 defending scenario. So it was a case of the help defence was missing. So he's looking at the guy on the ball and not seeing the biggest threat of all, which is the runner. And I think it's really important that coaching comes into it, is that you understand pressure on the ball, but also where's the biggest threat coming from. And it cannot be just someone coming off a shoulder and a pop pass and breaks down the whole line. So if you're to look and analyse that back and say where that goal came from, you'd be disappointed with it. And you'd also be very much disappointed with the amount of hand passes that were given over the last line. You know, a shimmy out 2 yards and back over the top. I think Dublin got three fisted points yesterday. You know, if needs be and you're in control of a game, there were probably goal chances as well. So you'd like to be cutting out those goal chances.
Do you think that Dublin are improving?
From where they were?
Yes.
From last year, Paul?
Yes.
Not the league.
And we'll say, and the peak of that 5-in-a-row team. Do you think we've seen the peak of that team? Do you think they're on the way down? Do you think they're improving?
I don't think they're getting better than they were. There are some young fellas coming through, which is great to see as well. You know, you take Paul Mannion, Jack McCaffrey, midfielders have got one. You know, Brian Finton is probably looking for a partner at the minute. Peter Cook yesterday showed where there was a mismatch from McMahon there. You know, I'd wonder if Galway weren't getting those mismatches three or four times in the first half, where the Galway kicker was going to go to. But he, you know, that was a first half out for Galway. I think if John Small was probably there, he'd probably do a better job on that side of it. But, you know, are they improving? I don't think so. I think they're probably holding their own, but it's up to everybody else to catch them.
Oisín.
Yeah, the game yesterday, I felt as if, you know, Galway looked a lot more competitive. Obviously, a lot of balls behind the ball, bodies behind the ball. And I think that's a natural reaction to conceding 4:21. And I think when you're playing against the better teams, I'm still not 100% sure if they are as comfortable as what you would like to think they are in that scenario, and there's still things to work on. But when I look at the football over the weekend, and I look at, I would think, probably the best team defensively that I had seen for some time were Donegal, and how they set up structurally. And that seems to have waned a little bit in the last 3 years. And I don't know if their coaching focus has gone away from that. But like the defending that I have seen from Donegal over the last 2 weeks, they're still getting bodies back into the defence. But I just think the one-on-one tackling, their, I suppose, last-ditch defending. You know, like, I thought Galway yesterday started sort of bodies in a little bit more, started making it a little bit more physical, caused Dublin problems that way. I think there's a problem with the kickers, and I think that's partly to do with targets, but also partly to do with the keeper. There was one situation yesterday where we were looking at the high behind on the top goals in German, and he had lots of things to hit, and he hit it straight down the middle, and Brian Fenton got it, and Dublin ended up getting a score from it. So I think there's a few different issues going on there, but I think defensively, Galway are going to have to stick with what they have now. I think everybody wants to play the open and expansive football, but all you have to do with a team now is around the middle area or coming out of their defence, is just slow it. Slow it down in some way. Dublin, notoriously in the big games, have fouled people in that area and have been able to slow the ball down. That's allowed them to get bodies back. And I think teams need to be a little more acute on how they slow teams down in that transition. But the killer for a lot of teams, and including Galway, is turning the ball over, you know, when they're coming out of defence, and, you know, they're trying to get bodies up the field, they're turning the ball over, and all of a sudden, you know, you'd look in and the matchups again are one-on-one, and that's where they really hurt you, you know, and that's how, and they are so physical around that area. And I noticed something yesterday, just looked at the changes before the game, and I looked at the likes of Brian Howard and O'Coffey Bourne coming in, and how physical. Like, I remember O'Coffey Bourne playing at a, not sure if it was minors or under 20s, probably minors. And, like, the unity is now in comparison to what he was then. And I know there's a natural progression for all these guys, but, like, if he can't do a job for Dublin somewhere in the middle of the field, like, you know what I mean? Then, like, they are looking for a partner for Brian Fenton. And maybe he's the answer to that. He is a big, big man. They get a lot of hits on in that middle third of the field, slowing the ball down. And I think that the thing about Dublin, not just yesterday, but on a continuous basis, is that they are prepared for that last-ditch tackling. Obviously, Cooper was getting a bit of a tough time from Shane Walsh to put Fitzsimons over to him. He does a better job on him, and that's the way they'll tweak it and move things around. But I just think that Dublin are actually, I think, better one-on-one defenders than other teams, but they get bodies back in to help also.
Is that one-on-one defending that Dublin are quite good at, or very good at it, is that nature or nurture, Kevin? is that something that they've, that has been coached, or are these just guys who are natural defenders who have good footwork, who understand the positions to be in intuitively?
Yeah, I don't see Dublin actually leaving themselves isolated too often with the 1v1s, to be fair. We've played them in back in our own time. You know, we did find that the likes of Damien Comer and even Shane did give them enough if they got 1v1, to be fair, regardless of footwork. But look, I suppose you're looking at a massive push from Dublin back in the early noughties. And, you know, they've had the underage camps, they've had, and the more numbers you have, I don't care what you say, the more numbers you have, the better chance you're going to get somebody with natural ability. So, you know, they have the numbers. They've really worked hard on it. They've something like 70 coaches, you know, paid coaches in all the clubs. I presume they're coaching the stuff we're talking about, the footwork and stuff. So there's a better chance you're going to turn out better players for that. So I don't, you know, I suppose it's unfair of me to comment. I haven't seen what they coach. But I wouldn't underestimate the value they put on the help defense and how they get somebody else to be within an area that if there is a 1v1 most of the time, that they're ready to step in and they understand when to step in. So, you know, the 1v1 in defending, if bodies are back, is gone. And if it's not gone, it should be gone, because you are going to get terrorized by good ball players. Bottom line. And even if you look back on that goal I spoke about yesterday, the second goal, Burn got for Dublin. There's two gobby guys standing there, you know, but two looking at the ball. And the slip comes in, you know, within 5 yards. Now, if you train people to see man, see ball, see danger, see ball, you've got to be seeing where the runs are coming from. And if you do, if you have to step back 2 yards to make that V shape, that you can see both, and that now you're managing and marking both threats, that's when you become a better defender. So, you know, I think there was a point as well in the first half where, you know, Paul Conroy got his feet just completely caught up, and the Dublin guy came straight in and went through the top of the arc because his feet were poor. So, like, footwork is vital. I don't know exactly what Dublin are doing, but they're really, really good at the help defense.
I read your book and your autobiography. It's almost wrong to call it an autobiography, Kevin, mm-hmm. because there's so much more in it than the story of your life. And I will say straight out, I'm not a massive fan of GA autobiographies. I can kind of take and leave most of them. But what I think distinguishes this book is the amount of information in it in relation to coaching, and the amount of information about setting up teams and how you go about it, and in particular the amount of time that is spent on organizing a defense and everything around it, and the advice that comes to people. And you set it out really clearly, and I think the fact that it's called The Invisible Game is really interesting. What is The Invisible Game?
Do you know something, Paul? We almost called it 79-1 because it was so important.
Yeah, explain. Maybe start with that. Maybe explain 79-1 first of all.
79-1, I suppose, when you hear 79-1, the first question is, what actually is it? So that was something to draw attention. So 79-1, it really is in county football that, you know, we have to be planning for 80 minutes. And, you know, no matter how you look at it, with overtime, injury time, or a referee deciding that on 2 minutes, it might be there at all. You just have to be, you know, planning for that 80 minutes. So it probably stops players from looking at the clock at 75 and trying to see a game out. That you've got to stop that. But the 79-1 really is that you've got to take it that all your players are 79 minutes off the ball. Lucky if you're on it for 1 minute. And the top player, a top ball holder, will be on it for 1 minute max. And I think when you break that down, people start to ask questions. Well, how can I coach players to impact a game when they're 79 minutes off that ball, whether it be defense or offense? What positions can I get them to take up? What's the body work like? What's your visual awareness like? What's your balance like? Your low power. If a ball is in the air, you go back to the, you know, Kerry got beaten last year by a late goal by Cork. You know, what was that defender doing when the ball was in the air 4.5 seconds? That's the same as running 30 yards. So how do I do that? But at that point, the Kerry defender was back. He just needed to have his body position proper. So it was kind of the invisible game, really, Paul, is stuff that we actually probably don't see enough. And, you know, so the 79-1 was that to get the point across. So that's really what it is.
So it's what you do in that game when you don't have the ball in your hands. It's really as simple as that. So whether your team is attacking, it's how you're helping create space, or how you're supporting player, how you're clamping the defence. And when you're defending, it's how you where you should be, how you're marking your man, how you're helping the team, how you're trying to deny the opposition space.
Yeah, and Oisín touched on it there. You delay, you deny, you defend. And I think if you, people can get to a point where defend is your third option, you're in a good place. So whether it be, like Oisín mentioned there about, you know, dragging someone down at the front or pulling them up, or did you actually step off them because the two guys coming at you? Then did you, or you might take them, like we used to use the sewer lines, take him down into lane five or lane one, if you divide the pitch into five lanes. So when you take him down there, he might be making field advancing, but he's not making advancing towards the goal. So while you're doing that, that everybody understands, you know, what can you do to make the best result for your team? And again, like the reason we've called our company Grow Coaches, it's not only about players. We'd love for coaches to be able to coach coaches, to coach people to make an impact in 79 minutes. And like, if you're talking about club, you just break that down to 69-1, and that's it's the same principle. But, you know, does that mean you're going to win North Ireland? It doesn't. Does it mean you're going to win a provincial championship? It doesn't. But it probably gives you a better chance of getting the best you can out of the team available to you. And, you know, there's no point saying, and I've made a point in the book as well, the guy that wins the All-Ireland as manager doesn't necessarily mean he's done the best manager's job that year. You know, you've got to look at the group. Where's the group come from? What's the group capable of? All those type of things. But all you can do as a coach is get your team to that point. And when somebody steps in, you know, from an underage into a team that knows what it's doing, that team can actually coach that young fellow himself. Now, I suppose a little thing with Galway at the minute would be, you know, when I've seen, you know, five young fellas stepping in against Kerry, that's a third-year team. Very, very difficult to be up against the very top teams in the country to say, out you go and play an expansive game and have a cut of those guys. They're too wily, they're too long around, and your own 10 that might be still remaining there, you know, there has to be gaps somewhere if you're still using the same type of coaching. The gaps have to appear if you're not fully used to it.
Oisín.
Kevin, do you think there's too much emphasis on the manager in GAA or not enough emphasis?
Well, Oisín, I suppose the manager in the GAA, is, as we all know, is completely different to what the guy was 15 years ago. The manager, you know, back when we started and played a lot, would have been coaching the team as well. I think you'll probably back this up yourself. The coaching the team didn't really consist of a whole pile of tactics at that time. You got people as fit as you could. You got them to buy in. You got a good culture. But, you know, the stuff with sweepers and understanding where the sweeper should play, the equipment, the tools of skills you give a sweeper, for instance. You know, you look back, you look at maybe Tyrone, who would have played Colm Kavanagh quite a bit there. Monaghan played Darren Hughes there. But if you break down the tools they're being given, when somebody breaks the front line of defence, if you watch what they do, the tools aren't brilliant. They're very good to pick up loose ball, but their footwork is what I would consider very, very poor behind the line. So when them lines are broken down, they have a continuous full stride heading for the ball, but they don't know how to stop. So that's a massive deficiency in a team that's good. Because if you don't understand how to stop your and go into a stutter step, you're going to have a missed tackle. More often than not, maybe 1 out of 10 you get a good striker, maybe a ball be dispossessed. But the tools you're being given now in deep level coaching wouldn't have been at that time. So I would say to you, Oisín, the manager is responsible for the coaching of the team. He's responsible for everything. He's responsible for how the players are turned out. He's responsible for the environment in the team. He's responsible for the media. He's responsible in the support that he's given by the county boards. He's a whole lot of responsibilities, which takes away from the power of coaching. If he's a very good coach as well. So you have to put the emphasis on the coach or on the manager. But I suppose it's funny. The coach, if the team does well, will be remembered a long time for being a great coach and can do the circuits for years. The coach can be the player's friends when he doesn't make the decisions. If you win, the coach had a great input. So it's probably a far easier job. If you have a coaching knowledge, it's a far easier job to go home after training and have a night's sleep. That's the way I put it here.
And Kevin, when you first went in with Sligo, did you think that you were going to do the coaching and the managing?
Totally.
Or at that stage, was that still sort of half possible?
It was very possible, I suppose, at Division 4 level, I would think, because the expectations that was expected to come out of, you know, Sligo, who were down Division 4, I'm sure we weren't looking at winning kind of titles at that point. They just want to get up to divisions. So, and I suppose the amount that's available to you in a smaller county is that's in a big county isn't there. So there's no point thinking it's there. So at the point, I'm sure they're delighted to see a fella coming that they didn't know could he manage or not. They hoped he was a good coach because he played at a high level. So I was lucky to get the job. But I mean, you know, 7 years later when I was in Galway, was I different than when I was the day I went to Sligo? Absolutely. You know, Shane, I would have surrounded myself with people. I straight away went looking for people, sports psychologists in the background, people who would have been at a high level dealing with elite sports or elite in life. That I would always put someone around me that I would be challenged myself as to how I was doing things. It wasn't nice what you hear back, but I was always very conscious and willing to say that I'm surrounding myself here with someone that would actually challenge me while I was challenging players, because maybe I'm challenging players the wrong way. So it'd be very, very important for me to be challenged by somebody from outside a forest. So put it this way, we were in the forest, we were all the trees, the players, the trees, the management, the trees, the footballers, the trees. I needed someone outside a forest looking in. And I would always, so by the time I had my years done there, in the first year or two in Galway, I would certainly be a lot different person and coach than I would have been when I went to Sligo first. Oisín, if that answers your question.
And where did the connection come with Paddy Talley? Did you just see Paddy Talley from afar, or had you known him sort of in-depthly before that?
I didn't know. Paddy, I'd seen Paddy, but, you know, obviously it would have been with Tyrone when they won the All-Ireland. They said to you, coaches get a good name then, so they're always on the horizon. But then, obviously, in fairness, you know, you look at St. Mary's and in the colleges and stuff that Paddy done, I mean, that was brilliant, you know. And again, sometimes I'd be reluctant to say somebody coming in that is well in a Sigerson that's not in the college full-time. Because, you know, you look at Sigerson teams, it's a very, very short spell. Yeah. Only a certain amount you can do with them. So if you're gifted that a savage amount of good county footballers from all over happen to come into your college, there's a great chance you're going to win that anyway. You know, and look at Cos McGlynn, yourselves in the past, Oisín, massive footballers came through there. If you mind me saying, don't mind me saying, I think the quality of football that was there, whether it came from the underage or the tradition or the culture, but you had massive players there as well. I think you'll have to see, because most went on to represent, you know, Armagh. Same with Corrifin, massive, massive area, massive numbers, seven national schools. You know, I like to break down areas with national schools because it gives you a great chance to see, you know, it's not geographical. You could have 8,000 acres of bog and forestry. That doesn't mean that you're going to have a whole lot of players coming out of the woods. You know what I mean? So if you look at national schools, that gives you numbers straight away. So sometimes you're going to win things by numbers or by, you know, a bit of luck of a group that comes to at a certain time. But this is where the bigger counties need to get to. You can't be relying on luck. You can't be relying on once in 100 years a group comes along. You've got to get to a part where your environment and your setup is right, that the underage structure of coaching is right. You know, Paul, you've asked about Dublin, but for anyone to challenge with that, we've got to get our underage structure back to the 79-1 to come out of that. You know, if you look at coaching, it's mainly a little bit of tactics now. It's definitely physical. It's a lot of ball skills and all that. So we're not taking the shine away from that. That's fully required. But who's going to the next level? The next level is 79-1. So who's going to challenge the Dublins this World Cup? Whoever gets the 79-1 right, whoever gets the support structures right around them, whoever's prepared to bring the alumni of players who would have represented counties in the past, who have done well in business and who feel welcome to come back in with their ideas. You know, all those little things that county boards aren't doing, they're looking at what they shouldn't be spending this. You know, why not give a pass to the ex-players who have done really, really well to make them feel welcome back in? Give them a pass to a gate. Okay, make them feel welcome back in. Because you're going to need all that if you're going to compete with the Dublins as well to come forward. And that's where it's gone to, you know. We can look at talking about size and split in Dublin to do. There's a lot teams and county boards can do. Can the likes of the smaller counties of 25,000 people bridge that gap? I don't think that that's possible because of numbers, but they could certainly be looking at Division 3, Division 2. There's always a target for every county can be looking at. So, Oisín, you asked me about Sligo. When I went there, the target was to get out of Division 4. That was the target. There was no other target there. So I got the background team around me probably to support that.
So you got to a couple of Connacht finals with Sligo. And then you were the manager coach of the first of the Sligo team, the first ever Sligo team to beat Galway on Galway soil in Championship football in 2012. How did you find that day? What was it like to be a coach of a different county against Galway?
Paul, look, you don't, you know, when I went to Sligo first, I'd be straight with you. Sligo Division 4, it was a good stepping stone for me. Geographically, it made absolutely no sense. But, you know, when I sat down to talk to county board, I actually, that was my spin. Geographically, I was trying to find a way not to do this. But I also wanted to dip my toe. And I also, you know, felt maybe from coming over the border into another county where people couldn't be saying, oh, the West versus the North, the East versus the South, or the Hurling versus the football. It was a nice place to start. But I suppose back on that day, I had been with the guys for quite a while that time, and that was my family. And I had so much work put into those guys, getting out of Division 4, Division 3, up to Division 2, starting to be competitive at top level, you know, taking Kerry down to a penalty miss and down their own patch. These boys were starting to perform at high levels. And when I came to Galway, you know, at that point, I had so much put into Sligo. I felt good that day. I felt really good after the result, to be fair, because of the work that I'd done and because of the buy-in that those boys showed to me.
And when you went to Galway, when you went to manage Galway, you said you'd looked at Galway before you went, and you looked at Mayo, and you held Galway up against Mayo in terms of the Mayo team that was then dominant, being a while since Galway had won a Connacht Championship. And you talked about Galway's soft underbelly. You talked about them lacking steel. You talked about them rolling over, and you said that you had to tear the whole lot down and start from scratch.
Yeah, that's the way it felt. I suppose when you look at the Galway team getting the hammer on home soil in the Pierce Stadium, and you know, I've quoted there, you know, players up the crowd and 18 pints up. It was hard enough to take. But Mayo were a really, really, really good team at the time, and they had come on massively. So there was going to be a massive job to get up to that standard. And I suppose they were the standard bearers at the time, so that was the team that I was looking at. And we had to, again, that's back in your 7-9-1. What could I do that was different to what I felt people were doing before that? How do we think our way around this? And, you know, we had a lot of closing to do on the quality of player as well. So where were we going to take space that mattered, and where were we going to make space that mattered? And all those type of things that I suppose we were doing, you know, that took an awful lot of time in relation to video analysis. I suppose over a period of time, I don't like, as I said in the book there, I don't like to take, you know, even how you've done over one season for me isn't enough. This needs to be 3 to 5 seasons. I certainly don't take how you do in one game, because this needs to be a number of games. And so when you look back and you analyze the game, you've got to also look at, we talk about kickouts. You know, for instance, when we break down kickouts over a long period of time, without getting too much into it here, we found one of our kickouts, the more we lost the ball on the kickout, the better results we got. Now, that might sound crazy.
It's a counterintuitive point. That doesn't sound to make, you know, when you hear that, how can losing the ball be a good thing?
Yeah, and the only answer I can give to you, over a long period of time, the outcome of what was there, I can stand by it and say to you this minute now, and without getting too much into it, because I can't give away too many secrets, would be that sometimes in a particular kickout, I won't say sometimes the wrong word, overall, the facts stand up to say that over a certain type of kickout we'd done, which would be quite repeated quite a bit, we had better results when we lost the ball in the kickout.
I think I know the kickout.
Come on, Oisín.
Go on, Oisín.
Was it the overload?
The overload. Yeah.
Yeah, and that worked quite well for you. So I actually always held that up in very high esteem, because I thought that was actually something that worked really well for you. But that just shows you know what I mean, what you're seeing in front of your face and the actual facts of it are.
Just to let you know, like, I mean, that overload kickout, whether you were in the college, I was calling it box plus one, right? We had between 13 and 15 other options off that kickout if the overload was tried to be stopped. So it wasn't just a case of it set up and bang out there. There was a numerous other small things off that. And I suppose when you look at Bernard Power yesterday, I suppose you mentioned about the camera over the top. You take out the mismatch with Peter Cook. I take a point, I totally take a point. If there's something on for a goalkeeper, he's got to hit it. But he's also got to be given a big hand by the amount of options you're going to give him without putting too much into his head, because there's loads going on. But like, I felt, you know, looking down on the few times that went in yesterday, the high camera from the back, I felt there was a serious amount of lack of movement. And again, I've got to be careful on this, because I know a lot of people, when they analysed our game, wouldn't have seen what we were trying to do. So maybe there's something else in there. But I couldn't find a whole pile there from a kick-out scenario yesterday that was outside the one-to-one man-v-man kick. So that's something I think Galway really have to come back to or improve on. Because at the end of the day, there's a whole lot of new faces there compared to when we were there 2 years ago. So I'm not going to keep talking about what we've done, because it's a different kind of a group here. But that's absolutely vital, you know. And like, if you look at Shane Walsh yesterday again, really, really good, carrying the ball. But you put the likes of you know, if we don't have other options in Galway, when you hit the bigger pitches, how many times will Shane Walsh be able to do those runs? He's going to find, and in fairness, you know, as all the talk, he was back and, you know, back working out, in particular the whole first half yesterday. He was back in the half back line defending and all that type of stuff as well. So there's no point throwing a right away from that. You know, they did understand that you cannot go on without helping out your backs. And by the way, that's not anything of a plight, because every team does this. Donegal's, Tyrone's, Dublin, any team that's winning at the top level do this. But whoever does the best, and that's why I'm back to my footwork, the balance, your visual awareness, your 2v1 when it comes in at you, where's the threats coming from, what areas of the field do I mark 3 sections out of 5, do I mark 4 sections out of 6, all those type of things. Do I step up my arc defence out to the 55 with the breeze being against you, the 45 against when the breeze is with you, all the type of stuff. Where are the areas that you can actually condense, and how do you hit the counter? You know, and if you look back 2018, we had a lot of bodies available to, our counter attack had just come to the point where it was what they would consider almost top class. And if you even that Ireland semi final against Dublin, where it wasn't broken down properly,
did you think you were going to win that day? Did you think you were going to beat Dublin that day?
Yes, I did. And to be fair, when I break it down, I take out the last 20 minutes when I'd say we got sapped because of all we actually done wrong in front of goal. We had 18 chances to their 12 in the first half. We had three goal chances to their one. We had a penalty missed. We had another just simple offload to tap the ball in the goal. We had done all the stuff right to get the ball to the point where we could score. But we didn't score. And we've got to be careful on this. And this is where Galway have this name of always, you know, Galway get wonderful scores, but on a consistent basis, it's got to be chomping away at the bit all the time and taking your percentage of scores. That's where it's got to be, because if you get 90% one day and you're down to 40% the next day, that 40% will take you out of the championship. You're made better off if you're up at 70 all the time and tipping away. So all these things need to be looked into, you know?
Yet in the analysis of that game, Galway were perceived to be a long way off the mark because of the final scoreline. Were you frustrated by the end of your time, or even during your time as manager, at the analysis of your games?
To be fair, Paul, we lost that game, heavily on the scoreboard. So unless things would change in how games are analysed, no, I wasn't mad about that, because that's the way it is. We were beaten by 9 points, if it was. But I suppose for people to understand what's going on, it'd be lovely if people can go in that little bit deeper and see what's going on, more than kickouts, and explain why there's a... So, for instance, that last 20 minutes was very poor from our side. So you would have to say that the team just, at some point, got flat. We'd say we're 2 points down at halftime, should have been 7 up. And, you know, 2 very simple frees after halftime, which you'd have to say are momentum changers. Then you're 4 down, and all of a sudden, the flatness kicks in, because this is a team that's playing the best team in the land, and I suppose don't have the full belief that they would have, or maybe I would have. So, you know, to be fair, I would say that you asked about Paddy early on. I've won the chapters in Ushing called Poor Paddy, because I think when Paddy came in, he got an awful going over, and unfortunately, it seemed to have brought a little bit of lightning on top of us as well. And we've won a particular gent who just never stops. I see him at the weekend again with another bullshit of a heading, so I couldn't even read it. But, you know, so that does draw a bit of liking to a team. I think Emphasis Morris had the same himself maybe 2 years previous. But in 2018, we felt our transition was right up there with the best, and our defence is right up there. So if you look at the goal from, you know, Burns' goal yesterday in particular, and the goal chances that Dublin had, you know, we had that down to one goal in the National League, in the whole league in 2018. That was 7 minutes in injury time when we were beating Manor by 8 points.
But you were perceived, your setup was perceived as being particularly negative in or particularly defensive. Did that, would you agree with that characterization? And how would you feel about that characterization?
I totally, Paul. I actually totally agree with that. And I would see it as a huge compliment. Because for Galway had before that was the traditional suits Galway. And look at, I think, you know, it's you see, the perception is reality. And for Galway to understand and get out of this is, and we're very, very careful in this. People say that the traditional style suits Galway, right? It's probably suits Mayo and it suits Kerry and it suits Dublin and maybe Armagh. That's what Galway play. Because if you break down, Galway have, I see a neighbour of mine here, Peter Lee, was on the last National League winning team here 40 years ago, 1981. That's what Galway have won. Take out the two All-Irelands in our time when we were blessed with a gang of young fellas and probably blessed with a few older fellas were there as well to help them along and blessed with John O'Mahony who came in as a very good organiser. Take out that three-year spell. Galway have won no All-Irelands in 1966. So a traditional style or whatever you want to call it, you know, football has moved on here. It's whoever takes the space in the right areas and makes in the right areas and converts their chances. That's the team we're going to win. So with the quality of player. So if you ask the question about defensive, you see, there's a defensive and there's attacking style. When you say defensive and you're stopping goals going in, that for me is a compliment that you're actually defending really, really well. And what defensive means is you put your team in the best places, the best areas of the pitch to defend. That might mean in the middle lane from the 55 back. And leave two up or three up, whatever it is. That may mean what we call the what-if scenario. Have the team you're playing with, have you an extra man? Have they an extra man? Have you a storm? Have you not a storm? All this here. If you have a storm, you might push eight up against the front six in the kick-out. Push them up to hell. Leave the two corner forwards free. Why not? That ball takes three kicks to get there. With the wind, it might take a kick and a half. So you've got to put all the what-if scenario in there. Because when it comes to analysis, and this is why I don't like analysis, is... And I talk about national analysis, right? Maybe it's, you're far closer than I am on this. Maybe it's a handy, every Sunday night this guy's there and it's a handy little flick out, pull out a few bits here, show what it looked like. But the balance isn't there. The facts aren't there. It's very easy to pull out a clip or two and say, oh, this is completely different. Where it might not be. So, you know, we try to analyze things. We try to do all that kind of stuff. And when we break down, I actually took a Dublin game, I've written the book, a Dublin game in our game, because Dublin were playing this expansive football and we were this and that. And it was 14-15, the amount of times when there was 14 men behind the ball at a certain part of the pitch. So I just needed to, clear, you know, to see was there something we were doing. So I'd always take the Sky, the RTE. I'm always looking for an inch to find something somewhere. I'll ring a Division 4 manager if they played a challenge against someone bits of company. Just anything you can get is really important. So that's probably where I have the figure. So that's why... You know, I put on Matt's minutes of movement. Like going back to the kick-out I spoke to you about. The maths on that was that there was a good outcome. When you do the maths on it, but you'd need to do the maths to find your outcome. Because if you were to go by the analysis that Galway lost, we'll say 50 out of 20 kick-outs in what we call that box kick-out, that's the actual analysis the country can see. But my analysis is, I'll keep going there. Because I'm actually, when that ball is won by the opposition, there's about 2 seconds there for us to get it back. Their defenders are coming out to come off the shoulder to go mad. You take the ball back off them. Now they're not set up, which gives our forwards a better chance to go forward and kick some scores. So there's loads of reasons for it, but that's where the maths movement and comes into the whole thing. But that's a roundabout way, Paul. That's a roundabout way to answer a question.
I'm waiting for Oisín to defend his analysis from last night's League Sunday.
Oisín was good last night. I watched you, Shane.
Oh, stop. No, do not do this.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin. Kevin, on the punditry stuff, did that irk you or did that annoy you as you were in the Sligo job or Galway job?
Did it annoy me when I was in Sligo as well, Oisín, is it?
Did it annoy you? Did it irk you, like, you know, the way people reported on it? Maybe when you were in Sligo, it wasn't, there definitely wasn't as much analysis on what Sligo were doing as opposed to what Galway were doing.
That'd be fair. Galway, absolutely. Galway got far more. And Division 1 is against Division 3 at the time, Division 4. So that's only natural. But did it irk me? I tell you when it started to irk me, O'Shane, and I mentioned the book, was when I felt that it was actually making, it had an impact on some decisions from referees and stuff. I still feel it has. And you see, you've got to look at momentum changers. And this crack of, you know, it's about time that we step up as well and analyse referees' performances. It's got to happen. And if we have to go out and pay referees, because those games are too big, it cannot be, oh, it's my day this day and your day. You take the Meath game yesterday. And I know that it was two teams that changed a lot of their teams and they both are qualified. But you look at when the score was quite close yesterday, that decision before the penalty came to Mayo, you know, you've got a referee 5 yards away looking at it. You've got the linesman looking at it, who's got a flag in his hand. He's a qualified referee. He hasn't got the power to put the flag up and say, that's a foul. His hand was pulled as he went to pass it off. 10 seconds later, the ball is in the back of the net from a penalty. A minute and a half later, the ball is in the back of the net because the momentum changed completely. That's from me. You know, it's got to come to the point where these momentum changes have got to be stopped and referees have got to be analysed. I mean, because there's too much work being done. And I suppose, Ocean, you brought me on the referees on the basis, because I do feel that the negativity that came, in particular, I suppose, after Paddy came down and we were doing really well in defence. Paddy hadn't even been into us until into January. And Paddy got blamed for the defensive structure that was put in place. And it's now, unfortunately, he's, you know, one or two guys are still following him up and down and won't give him a bit of a break at all. He needs a break as well. Any manager needs a break, because it does bring a bit of attention and it does affect how, you know, a little bit of one or two referees who aren't strong enough will step out and cause momentum changes.
And people within your own county, Kevin, in the book, and the book is relentlessly positive, actually. So I don't want to be focusing on the negative aspect of it. Like, it's it's a very positive book. But you also got, it wasn't just criticism from analysts. You got a lot of criticism in Galway from certain people. Like, you talk about vitriol, vile abuse, ill-informed crap, toxic vilification, and crowds becoming increasingly unstable. And this is in a situation where you played 17 years senior football for the county. You had 3 All-Stars, 2 All-Irelands, an All-Ireland minor medal as well. And even then, you got no insulation.
I don't think anybody gets insulation, Paul. And you know, and for anybody that's going into management, so I know, Paul, you were in an awfully, you know, Shane, you'll probably head in there in a year or two. You're going to find that about 18 months is when your management will start, regardless of what you do. So, you know, if I'd say to any young manager, don't be worried.
18 months is when the management, 18 months.
Into your job, yeah. If you're not sacked at that point. So 18 months.
That's when the abuse will start.
Not abuse, your management will start. And, okay. You know, abuse is from a small number of people. I don't want to overstate that. But unfortunately, they're there and they need to be wiped out. But when you've got, and this again, the perception is reality. And again, the false analysis, and I suppose the traditional Galway and how it's been put out there by some pundits would be, it is driving a perception into the public who are now starting to listen to this type of stuff, who get to another side of the fence too quickly. But getting back to the 18 months, you're going to find as a manager that, you know, what the guy you done before, there's always a blooding in period. If you have a really good first 12 months, you're a super manager waiting to be knocked. If you have a poor first 12 months, you'll be given a little bit of time to come in and do that. Don't forget at this point, your players are starting to get to know you. They start to see what you're like. The guy sitting on the bench for 12 months has now lost patience. All this type of stuff comes on top of you. So it's how you manage this with your man-to-man management. You've got to have, you know, the relationships formed the first year. You know, you've got to have your one-to-one with each player so that he feels comfortable coming to you, that he's not being violent behind the background, because the conduit of getting the message down to players also should work the opposite way. So there's, you know, if someone feels he should be on the team or he feels this, he should be open to come to a management itself somewhere where they feel, so they can get what I would say the KPIs sent back down to them. There's a reason why you're not playing, and here's 2 or 3 of them. That's it.
I found that very interesting in the book, Kevin, the way that was laid out. And I found it on the website as well, the growcuts.ie website. I found it very informative in terms of the actual practical application of those principles that were laid out. But if you were to take a county team again and you saw a county, who would you like to take now?
Paul, you know, when I went to Sligo, I wasn't roaring at the time to take over a county team. I hadn't long stopped playing, a young family and everything else. So 5 years there, another 5 in Galway, 52 coming up next birthday. Not looking around at the minute, Paul. I'm not really looking around. I've managed Division 4, 3, 2 and 1. I'd love to get a go at the Kerry team. I think at the minute, the back isn't where it needs to be. It could stop them winning in All-Ireland. Kildare, Cork. Then again, have I got that? I'm getting older travelling, so I'm not so sure that happened. But I do see, there are three of the teams I pick out where I could see massive improvement, looking up to up to a certain level. But look, I've been in all the divisions. We've got our provincial titles, got to an Ireland semi-final the first time. Would like to got to an Ireland final, and obviously would like to win a final, which didn't happen. But I can't have it anyway. Once I walk away and I crunch the figures and the maths together after a 5-year period, which is a long time, and I put the win ratios in there and I put the games and I put the improvements that I think are there for whatever reasons, I'm quite happy to step away, that I've left the jersey in a better place if I think I have. If I haven't, I'd be straight with you. I don't think I'd be there 5 years. I'd probably spot it a bit earlier if things had gone too belly up. And there's no way I'd be working in an environment where I felt we weren't improving.
I want to talk about the four divisions on the weekend and what's coming in the next couple of weeks. We are not going to talk about the farce that is the finals in each division, which may or may not take place. We're not going to expend energy on what it would essentially be Mickey Mouse victories in any division. But we are going to talk about promotion and relegation, because these things really matter. And we're told all the time about how important the league is. And I think the GAA have made a shocking mistake in terms of the organisation of these promotion and relegation playoffs. The idea that they're not at neutral venues is absurd. The idea that a team that was originally lost home venue status because of breaches of training during COVID is wrong. But this goes much more than that. For games that are so important, the idea that they should be played on a home and away basis is nonsensical, in my view. Oisín, what's your view of it?
Well, if you're going to force me to go again, but I got home last night at 1 o'clock in the morning, went to bed, I got up this morning at about 7:45, and the volley of abuse from my neighbours started in Monaghan. had they not served enough of, I suppose the problem for me wasn't that that the punishment should continue, but I didn't feel as if those four counties should be rewarded with home venues. I think I really can't say any more than that. I think that's pretty self-explanatory, and I think that would be pretty fair. As far as where we're at with the leagues, I mean, Division 1 semi-finals are now basically glorified challenge games. I think the promotion and relegation elsewhere, the big games are now in 2 weeks for these teams as far as semi-finals are concerned.
So Armagh v Roscommon, let's look at Division 1. It's really interesting, by the way, northern section of Division 1 where peace and love broke out, very gentle matches, very little tackling and a whole lot of different ones. I don't know what's happening, but I think that's all about to change. Armagh v Roscommon and Monaghan v Galway, losers relegated.
Armagh, first of all, we beat Monaghan the first day, and yet I felt happier watching them against Tyrone and Donegal. I felt that we looked as if we could definitely be competitive. I think I had said earlier in my analysis that we are very easy to play against. We're not as easy to play against now. I think we have enough to beat Roscommon. I think it's a tough game. Tough game. I think it'll be very, very physical. And I think it'll be brilliant preparation for championship. As far as Monaghan are concerned, Monaghan goal is, and always has been, back to Kevin's time. I mean, there'll be a score in that one way or the other. Monaghan don't hammer teams. And Galway, I don't think, are in the position to do that right now. I think both setups will be sort of like a mirror image of each other. And I just think whoever's transition is just that little bit better on the day will eat that. That's a complete toss of a coin, 50-50 game for me.
Kevin, who how do you see those two games going? Armagh Roscommon and Monaghan Galway?
I saw Roscommon against Galway, and I thought they were very standoffish. There's no physicality at all in that game from them. From what I saw yesterday, you know, no more than Galway against Kerry, I think they might have got a bit of a kick in the backside. So they looked a bit more physical yesterday. So, you know, I think most teams at the minute, there might be one kick needed somewhere. And that's why we always have challenge matches and league matches. So there's an odd kick coming to every team at the minute. But, you know, Roscommon won't be easy. But I have to say, I've really liked Armagh, what I've seen so far. They have seriously good forwards as well. So I think Armagh just will sneak that one. But Roscommon,
and Monaghan Galway.
I'd be honest, before I leave that, Roscommon in the past, if they feel they've no chance, or if they feel they've been written off, Roscommon will come out with everything. If they feel that they have a good chance of winning themselves, they're normally flat. So if they're more than Armagh fancied, the more Roscommon will turn up. Galway Monaghan, as Oisín said, it's all been very, very close. A lot of new players on both teams, so it's going to be very, very difficult. Again, I think Galway probably learned a bit over the last number of games, where they're going to have to, you know, crowd the back to a certain degree. Any time they haven't done that, where they always talked, and maybe the traditionalists and maybe the commentary over the last number of years has been telling Galway you're going to do that. But as I said in the book, the amount of Kerry and Mayo for his little club and shake your hand and say, "Oh lads, you're lovely stylish footballers. We love playing against you," and they have to beat them by 15 points. That gives me a crunch in the stomach. So I don't care. We have to kind of cover up the back a little bit. So if Galway, you know, go the route like they've been doing the last two games, they should have every chance, but that'll be very, very tight.
Monaghan are actually an amazing one, Paul, because the first day against Armagh, I mean, like, honestly, you know, they're writing their obituary, you know, as far as, you know, Monaghan supporters are concerned, but they've improved so much since that. And I'm just now trying to dig myself out of the hole from last night. But I think the thing about going into that Tyrone game is that Tyrone's record against Monaghan is insane. And I think they've beaten them fucking 99% of the time they played them over the last 10-odd years. But Monaghan's improvement has been dramatic. And a few of those young lads who've come in have done really, really well. And they've improved them. They've injected a little bit of pace into that thing as well. So I think they're two good games, actually. Look forward to
Division 2, for promotion, Mayo play Clare and Meath play Kildare. The winners of both those games are in Division 1 next year. So, Oisín, Mayo, Clare and Meath, Kildare.
Again, no, definitely no Division 2 final this year. Mayo will beat Clare on the evidence of what I've seen. Mayo have had just a nice little league. That's the best way I can put it. And that things seem to have worked out really, really well for them. And they've not expended the same energy maybe as they would have done had they been in Division 1 yet. With minimal of fuss, they'll go back up, I think, in Division 1. I think they'll beat Clare. And I think Meath Kildare, I genuinely haven't a clue who's going to win that game. I've seen Meath, watched a bit of Kildare yesterday. Again, that's pretty 50-50 for me. Possibly Kildare this time.
Kevin.
I'd be going on the Meath side. I see a lot of the changes yesterday, but I was watching them the first half. You know, they kicked an awful lot of ball in. I think they were under instruction, but I mean, Mayo always had a sweeper in there. They just hoofed about the three or four first balls, and I just thought, I don't know what they were actually at, but I put that down to a lot of players being out. I liked Meath. I saw Meath against Galway a year ago in Navan. I thought Galway were lucky to come away with the points that day. Meath had five goal chances, took one, and I just, they seem to be building nicely, and I just fancy Meath on that one. Mayo, Clare, I would have said, are possibly one of the few Munster counties who've moved on with their game. And that's a compliment to Clare. I think that they're one of the best Munster teams at covering the back and understanding what they're doing when they're back there. And they're quite good at transition, but probably a step too far to take Mayo out. But Mayo will find it difficult against them. They work tirelessly hard, but they seem to have that help defence a bit better in order than what even take Kerry and Cork, to be honest. I think that if you're to watch what they do is quite good. I still think you're not guaranteed to win All-Irelands by doing that, so I think Mayo might just have the better footballers get over the line in that. But I don't think Mayo will have it all their own way in the first half.
Clare very good in the middle of the field as well.
Yeah,
but like very good. 1-8 from Tubridy.
Who's an excellent footballer.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable footballer, and it was an exhibition yesterday. In every single way, facet of the game, he can play inside, he can play outside, he can play, you know, and he defies his years, but I don't think he's going to...
Yeah, he's hard as well. He's hard, and he works hard.
But I do think as well, Paul, you watched some of the Clare's football yesterday. They're not afraid. If they get a 1v1 situation, they'll take you on.
Yeah.
You know the way a lot of players turn back? I've mentioned the book, The Triple Threat. They play off Triple Threat. You know, and a lot of players, a lot of teams, sometimes wait for someone to come off the shoulder, and they don't turn around looking in the eye. These Clare boys look you in the eye, so they do put the fear of chaos in a defender's eyes, and they have that little bit. If they can transition quick enough, they'll take you on 1v1, and they do get a lot of frees with Tubridy.
Yeah, Kevin, when Mayo were in their All Ireland finals, were you hoping they'd win?
Paul, there's a cross border thing here in Gaul and Mayo that always surfaces at some point. But look, for Connacht football, you know, I look back on Mayo. I feel sorry they didn't get over the line. I've looked at, you know, things that have happened, OGs. I've looked at frees at vital point times or missing. And you know, it turns me back to say, and I'm avoiding your answer at the minute, but the Croke Park issue, for me, is the biggest reason that Mayo have not won the round. And this has been totally ignored by pundits, by papers. And I think it's about time. Oisín, are you listening to me here? this is driven, Oisín. And I don't care what it be, because this is either finance or fairness. And you know, how you look at this, you know, I've put in the book, you look at the bookies. There's a different bookies odds for a home venue for a reason. Far beyond my capability or my smartness. You know, and it matches have gone down to a late free being missed. They've gone down to a penalty being missed. You look at Paul Gainey missing a penalty there in the against Dublin last year as well. Would he have missed that down Killarney? Probably not. Killian O'Connor's freeze probably would have struck those in Castlebar or maybe even Páirc Uí Chaoimh. You know, and you take Dublin down to Tuam yesterday. They don't feel at home in those type of environments. So for me, that's one of the reasons Mayo haven't won those Irelands, and they may have won two if the Croke Park issue is dealt with. And I do think you might say to me, well, every player wants to play in Croke Park. Of course they do. But on a semi-final stage, if it's Dublin, get them down to Páirc Uí Chaoimh or somewhere where there's 50,000 people coming in. 50,000 takes in all the semi-finals and make this a fair place. I could be wrong, Machine. You might make it.
No. That's exactly the point I made, Paul. If you go back to what we talked about last year after the Cavan game, I couldn't understand why Cavan, especially, okay, so we take the crowds out of it. Like, there was no crowds last year. That game should have been a neutral venue. I said it at the time. Cavan County Board came out and said, listen, there's no issue whatsoever. We want to go to Croke Park. We want to play in Croke Park. And I thought, right, fair enough. But that is the most naive thing I've heard in a long, long time, you know.
Yeah, but Oisín, you're going to have people that are sitting in those stools for 50, 60 years that don't have a vision of changing. And, like, you know, that unfortunately, that's us making our decisions at the minute in certain county boards. People are quite happy to, as I say, rub the back. And, you know, it's time to stop not rubbing the back here. And I take your point about crowds, but at the same time, what crowds have been bigger than 50,000 in a semi-final over the last number of years?
Yeah, true.
So if it's a Dublin involved, get them out to Páirc Uí Chaoimh if that can take it. And for me, that's fairness. And that allows, you know, we're all talking about the finance for Dublin. We're all talking about the structures. But something that's very, very easy to change is a home venue. Why are people shouting about the home venue now for National League? If there's no home venue, why are we giving out about Monaghan and Galway? Why are we giving out about Kerry and Tyrone? There's a difference in having a home venue. And if that makes a difference of 1 or 2 points, give every county their chance. I understand Ireland final, you know, the history of the GAA has to be played in Croke Park and all that type of stuff, and that's fair. But right up to the Ireland final, this has gone to a stage now where this has to be done. And back in my time, we played National League games against Dublin Parnell Park. It was never Croke Park. So, to be fair, Croke Park that time was a national stadium. This is now Dublin Stadium. So, for me, that's something that has to be dealt with.
Division 2 relegation playoffs. Down v Laois, Westmeath v Cork. But losers of both games end up in Division 3. Down v Laois, Westmeath v Cork. Oisín.
I seen Down against Meath last week. Was doing that game. They didn't look pretty for Down, but I think they've been holding out for this game. I think they have rested a few boys who've maybe just not been really at it the last couple of weeks. They went 7 down against Meath, and they took a lot of their guys off who you would think would be playing in the come championship. So I think Down have been waiting for this. Laois are on a downward curve big time since, you know, Mike Quirk started really well with them. So I'd go for Down. And this is a massive game with Westmeath and Cork. Massive, massive game for Cork. I mean, for Cork to go back down, when you consider that, you know, they've done, you know, all the work that has been done, the bit of positivity that was starting to come into the game, it looked as if they were building. Massive game. And I tell you what, Westmeath are no mugs. No mugs whatsoever. And I don't think they'll be happy with yesterday's performance. But again, I think they're a team that was waiting on this game. Cork's at home, and that may just be enough for them. But by just, I think they'll just about squeak it.
Kevin,
yeah, I think Cork will get over Westmeath. I've liked Westmeath. I thought they've been very good, especially defensively set up. They've Hezen up front, Egan. So you know they are quite a good side. Cork will earn that now. But I just think they're probably have enough to get over it. And I think, like you said, Oisín, I think Laois just don't seem to be travelling at all at the minute, whatever. I haven't seen them play. Unfair of me to say too much about them. But looking at the results of it, you know, Down were slow getting off as well. But I do think yesterday's performance will actually get them enough confidence to beat Laois.
Division 3. Before I say anything about Division 3, I'd like to acknowledge the effort that was made by the Offaly players and particularly the role players, and send my absolute respect and commiserations to the Morris family and to Road Club on the loss of Dean Morris, who was a tremendous fella, 5 Offaly Senior Football Championships, most recently played for Road in the 2019 final, played against my own club, Tullamore, in the 2018 Championship out in Clumbalough, played excellently that day. And he was a central part of the Road setup out there, and just beloved of all the players. And it's in that context that football matters and doesn't matter at all. Yesterday, Offaly beat, or Saturday, Offaly beat Tipperary, and they play Fermanagh in one playoff for promotion, and Derry play Limerick in the other one. Oisín.
Yeah, no, very brave, and definitely passing Dean Morris had a profound effect on a lot of guys. You know, myself and Niall would be fairly tight, and had a profound effect. So to go out and play in that game and play the way they played is testament to them. I think Fermanagh are very lucky to be in this situation. Awfully seem to be in the crest of a wave. If they are prepared mentally for what Fermanagh are going to throw at them defensively, and this will be something a little bit different than what they've experienced so far. I think if they're ready for that and they're ready for a battle, I think Offaly have enough.
But they're going to have to mind the ball. They're going to have to mind the ball in a way that they didn't have to against both Limerick and Tipperary, and it was a much more traditional game. But against Fermanagh, you just cannot do that.
I think they're going to have to be patient. I think they're going to have to be ultra patient playing against Fermanagh. But I still don't think Fermanagh are in a great place. But you talk about a team that's able to rally the troops and dig a result out in whatever manner, and I mean whatever manner possible. So if Offaly are ready for that, I fancy Offaly. And Derry against Limerick won't be the cakewalk that that maybe Derry think, or a lot of people would think. I think we've seen a few more frailties from Derry at the weekend. They were cruising, obviously, but Calvin, you know, our season outfit, and, you know, fairly few weaknesses in them. So I still think that Derry will win this game, but maybe just not as comfortably as what you think.
After the group game between Derry and Fermanagh, Derry won that match by 5 goals and 13 points to no goals and 9 points. Ryan McMenamin, the Fermanagh manager, had the following quote. He said, "Derry are a very, very fit team. Very, very fit. A very, very fit team." What was he getting at there, Roisin?
I think what he meant was they were quite fit.
Is that all?
I think he was suggesting maybe they didn't play as much football as what people would think. But anybody who watched them at the weekend, going back to the original discussion we had today, their transition is scary. And they have forwards that are going to punish you. And if you're going to beat Derry, you have to keep Shane McGuigan quiet. I watched six Tyrone defenders doing that, trying to do that 4 years ago when they couldn't do it when he was 19 years of age. So, you know, that's difficult to do. Niall Loughlin, Connor Glass in the middle of the field is a powerhouse. And then defensively, Christian McKay, Brendan Rodgers, again, seasoned players. So I think, you know, as much as Racy maybe was trying to stir the pot a little bit, there's more football in this Derry side than you realise.
So, Kevin, who'll win those matches? Offaly, Fermanagh and Limerick and Derry.
Yeah, I would. I'm going to, unfortunately, Paul, I'm going to go against your county here. I think Fermanagh will win against Offaly. I've been up there myself a few times with the Galway team.
Look, it's been lovely to have you, Kevin. Thanks very much.
I'm going to I'm finished. I'm taking the pressure off you, Paul. I'm taking the pressure off you. More the odds go out, the better. Look at it, it's just Brewster Park, and Oshin, you probably know better than the most. But for somebody from the other provinces coming to Brewster Park is, I don't know, it's a really hard place to play. You know, and I know they went up against Derry and got hockey the following week. But I just think for men at home, they have a serious record up there, and I'm not too sure, or, you know, will Offaly be able to take advantage of it. I haven't seen Offaly, to be fair, this year. Yeah. I've liked their progress. I really like their progress. I just think I'm going by the home win for Man. I think it's really, really strong up there. I think Derry are flying. They've been, you know, on a tough side as well. I know you're talking about Cavan, but Cavan are still Ulster champions. I just think that they seem to be moving awfully, awfully well. And Limerick have made massive strides in the last 2 years. I just think the strides might be enough. So I think Derry should be comfortable in that match.
The relegation playoffs in Division 3, Cavan v Wicklow and Longford v Tipperary. Oisin?
Very important games again. I think Cavan and Tipperary will win the two games. Longford are a team that could put a spanner in the works. I can't see Wicklow handling Cavan. Cavan just a little bit too much, and probably unlucky to maybe to miss out on semi-finals, but Longford could be a team that could throw a spanner in the works, and it's unbelievable, isn't it, that the two, you know, provincial champions are now trying to stave off going to Division 4. That doesn't bear thinking about it.
Isn't that part of the problem, though? Isn't that's part of the challenge that faces them? 6 months ago, they were preparing for an All-Ireland semi-final on the crest of a wave, euphoria in both counties, football communities, and now this
Do you remember, Paul, you know, when we talked about Cork and we talked about them for a couple of weeks, trying to back up what they did against Kerry, and they were in the Tipperary game and beaten, and this is a little bit like that, although it's over a longer period. But it's amazing, you know, how winning sometimes can soften things around the squad, and people start questioning things, and everything that was good enough before is not good enough now, and a little bit of that creeps in. But, you know, I think... It's not the end of the world as long as they don't go to Division 4, I think.
Kevin?
Yeah, Kevin for me. Just think there's too much.
And Longford Tip?
Longford. I just think Tip are you know, I think that they had quite an easy enough draw to not to be in that position, and they're in it. And I think the confidence obviously seems to be seeped out a lot. Thought they were very good last year. But I think Longford are that dogged team. I think they'll dog it out.
Division 4, this, we'll just look at the two matches. Antrim v Waterford in a Waterford venue and Loud v Carlow in a Carlow venue. Oisin.
Great for Waterford, you know, to have Antrim, Antrim at home, obviously, but like Antrim, again, just seem like a team going in the right direction. They seem like a county going in the right direction in every way, shape and form. And there seems to be a serious effort gone into it, and Louth having sorted a few initial issues should win that, and that will delight my in-laws, because anything to get out of Division 4.
Yeah, I think that, by the way, I think it should be acknowledged, there are football communities in Waterford who never get spoken about. It's swamped by the hurling. And it's football is the prime game in certain parts of Waterford, and this is a massive opportunity. I do agree that Antrim are favourites and probably should win, but I would not write Waterford off. And equally, Carlow. Carlow are ferociously hard to beat in Carlow. I think Loud will win, but it won't be close. Kevin, or it will be close. Kevin.
I'm going to go for Waterford. On the base, I watched a bit of the Sligo Antrim game last week, and Antrim were actually quite lucky to win that game at home, and that was a must win game for them.
Yeah, they were. I watched that as well. They were
lucky. I watched the penalty at the end, and loads of things were done at the end, and it was a home game. So I'm actually going to go for Waterford at home in that one. Big, they're huge, big men. They had in the past, and at home, the home is a big advantage as well. So I'm going to go for that one. I think Loud seemed to be going really, really well, but like you said, if Carlow go at the ultra defensive that they used to do, that'd be very hard to beat down there. So. Again, I haven't had my eyes on it enough to comment too much, but I just think Loud seem to be scoring well, so I'd give them a sneak.
And we'll finish like that. Thank you very much for joining us, Kevin. Thank you, Oisin. Thanks to Larry for running the podcast, to Tony Lean, to Allianz, and to everyone at Examiner Sport for making it happen. We'll be back soon.
You can listen back to previous episodes on irishexaminer.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Also available is the Mick Clifford podcast, an engaging and informative slice of current affairs with a unique interpretation of the week's big stories.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.